going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Right. It's time to wake on up. Wake up with a nice cup of Joe.
What's up, Joe, bro?
Featuring Joe Spadoni.
He's an Italian.
And Joe, the Butcher Boy Shasky.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, drop deep to left.
Ohtani connects to the
strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Zoe. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
I am slippery.
No!
The best part of waking up is morning roast in your cup.
It is the morning roast, man, on 95.7 The Game.
With the 11th pick in the 2025 NFL Draft, the San Francisco 49ers select Mykel Williams, defensive end, Georgia.
Oh, heck yeah.
Roger Goodell on the call yesterday from the 2025 NFL Draft, and that was Jana Mountain View. She's clearly fired up about it. Mykel Williams wearing the, what do they wear in Georgia, the red and black? Well, now it's the red and gold, baby. Come back to the West Coast, the best coast. Mykel Williams is now a San Francisco 49er. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. It's Spadoni. It's Shasky. It's a payday Friday. I'm feeling great. Carter's wearing the orange and black. The Giants, they're in fuego. They won their series against the Brewers. Sam Lubin, he's rocking his Giants. Everyone's wearing Giants. Oh, no, you're not. You're wearing your 49ers gear today. That's good to see. Shasky, we're going to get his info on the pick. There's a lot to break down today. Brian Baldinger. 7:30, Baldy's breakdowns. He knows every single one of these prospects inside and out. We'll get his thoughts on the 49ers drafting an edge rusher, a national championship edge rusher in Mykel Williams. Get to know him. We've got Bonte Hill, 9 o'clock, in studio, for the entire hour. He was doing some draft coverage yesterday for NBC Sports Bay Area. Also, we got to get into the Golden State Warriors because we did have an update on one Jimmy Butler III. I think we could all breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief there. His status for Game 3 still up in the air, though. But a lot to get into today, Joe. And we start with the NFL draft. How you doing?
I'm doing great. You know I love the draft. It's evaluation exercise, right? There's this entire, whether you want to call it the real estate market, the stock market, there's an entire financial component to how you evaluate the draft. It's not just, did you pick the right player? Like, because today we have no idea.
Oh, it's an A-plus grade. Everyone gets an A+.
No, I'm just talking about anyone in general.
I know.
Right?
It's so silly. The whole process is kind of laughable to me and how we discuss it, first and foremost. The fact that, let's just take a step back. The draft yesterday was at Lambeau Field in Green Bay.
Yes.
It's like 200,000 people there. Just, why? Why?
To drink.
Right?
Well, I mean, the party.
Like, well, I guess it is Wisconsin.
Like, what are we talking about? Like, are you kidding yourself? Yeah. People go into the middle of the desert and they play a little music and they're like, oh, it's a festival. It's Coachella. As I've seen people get like carried out, you know what I mean?
Sounds like they had
passing
great time.
Out in porta potties. How are you surprised? Anyway, it's an economic exercise, right? To a degree where you're basically sitting here and you're like, all right, I like this guy in the second round. I don't like him at 15, you know, like, for example, I remember the day that they drafted Javon Kinlaw. And I said to myself, like, I just don't like him at that spot. I don't want to take someone 13th overall with a first round price tag because there's money attached to each player who's only going to be a two down lineman.
And you knew immediately that they were just replacing DeForest Buckner with that pick, too.
Yes.
Which also made you not like that pick.
Right. And so there's an entire economic exercise wrapped around it. But like yesterday was the 20th anniversary, essentially, of the 49ers taking Alex Smith. Which is a great example. Yeah. I didn't love the Alex Smith pick. Who was going to take him? Like, what? Who's taking Alex? Right? You, Tampa, Gruden faked it. I'm going way back in the day. Like, you were. And then the Niners came out and said, yeah, we might trade for the number 4 overall pick. And we might take Aaron Rodgers. You're going to take 2 quarterbacks? Again, economic exercise. How dumb can you be? This is like doubling down. You can barely afford one house, but you're out here buying two. The Niners had a ton of needs. This year's Niners, a ton of needs. My number one need for this team was stop the run and get the defense better. I'm just going to give you, forget the player for a second. I'm going to give you, right now, you have Nick Bosa under contract and you have Fred Warner under contract. Name another player you know in the front 7 who's under contract.
Yetur Gross-Matos.
Exactly. Hence my point, okay? So on some level, it is pretty obvious this team needed to invest in the trenches. They need to get better. They needed to stop the nosebleed. Let me just give you some of the statistics before I get to the player and do I think it's a good player, a good pick. Last year, the Niners gave almost 2,200 yards on the ground. They gave up 2,200 yards on the ground. That's horrible. Horrible if you look at the league, all right? Absolutely horrible. They gave up 50 touchdowns in general. 50 touchdowns on defense. Now, yards per game, because the way the Niners play football, they want to run the ball. You're going to limit the amount of possessions a team has. If you throw the ball 40 times, the clock stops, you know, during every incomplete pass. There's going to be more snaps in a game. If you look at the Shanahan regime for the Niners, because of the limited number of snaps, because they're running the ball, because the clock is ticking, you're going to play less snaps. That being said, the 49ers gave up the 4th most points in the NFL last year. 44% of all possessions for the other team ended up in a score. That means almost half the time the other team had the ball, they were scoring a field goal or a touchdown. You needed to invest in the front 7. Now, we get to the pick. I have no idea if this guy's going to be Manny Lawson, who was a complete bust for the Niners, or Aldon Smith, who was an unreal pick, who should have went to the Hall of Fame, or something in between. We will see. Now, as a Niner fan, you're sitting here, in just the last 20 years, since that Alex Smith pick, they took Manny Lawson, who was an edge player to me, in the first round. They took Kentuan Ballmer, a D-tackle, in the first round. Aldon Smith, in the first round. Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner, Solomon Thomas. I don't consider Reuben Foster an edge. He's a linebacker. Yeah. But Nick Bosa, Javon Kinlaw, and now the kid Williams from Georgia. They have invested in the defensive line over and over and over. And when they hit, and when this team is good, and when they go to the playoffs,
nine times out of ten, they've got a fearsome front seven that leads the way. And if you're going to play Kyle Shanahan football, you're going to stop the run. You're going to force teams into long passing possession, long passing downs. You're going to run the ball down teams' throat. I love investing in the front seven. Now, that being said, I kind of like Walker from Georgia, the linebacker, better. But going back to my conversation about valuation, is it great value to take a linebacker top 12, top 13 overall? I don't know.
I could have understood it, though, considering he just moved off of Dre Greenlaw. Right?
Like, and how important, it, looking back on it, had they selected Dre Greenlaw with a first-round pick, would it have been worth it?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Now, tremendous value in the fifth round. Tremendous. I understand all that. Both Fred Warner and him were found late.
Later.
But I will give this regime credit. They found multiple linebackers who have gone on to play good ball elsewhere via the late picks in the draft.
I think this has been their Achilles heel, though. Outside of Nick Bosa, who was a can't-miss prospect, like, they have not been able to find him a running mate. They just haven't been able to.
No.
They have not hit on one edge draft pick since Nick Bosa. And that's a problem.
I agree.
And that's the only thing that's going to change this team and flip them. Like, if Mykal Williams ends up being a stud and is in,
of course,
you know, defensive rookie of the year conversations, because I look at what happened with the Los Angeles Rams last year, right? Jared Verse, you know, Braden Fisk, those guys, and what they were able to do as rookies, changing the whole dynamic of that defense after Aaron Donald retired. Like, that changed everything for them, in which they were, hell, you can make the argument they probably should have beaten the Eagles late in that drive. They had them on their heels, the game-winning drive. They could have gone to the Super Bowl and maybe won it. So, yeah, Mykal Williams is now a San Francisco 49er. I just, you know, like everyone does, you go back to the pick, you're like, all right, who's this guy? What were they saying about him before the draft? He's a Georgia Bulldog. He won a national championship as a freshman there.
He played as a true freshman.
True freshman.
On one of the baddest teams on the planet.
On one of the greatest college football teams we've ever seen.
Exactly.
And if Jalen Carter was his teammate.
Yeah, and if you look at some of the, you know, the way the Eagles have run things, like, yes, have they taken guys from Iowa? Iowa's a good football program. I don't know if you guys know this.
Defensively, yes. And their tight ends.
I was just going to say.
And their tight ends.
They're producing NFL talent, right?
Yes.
Like, look at it right now. The Big Ten and the SEC, that's where all the best players are coming out of right now. Those are the two conferences where all these top dogs are. And this guy went up against NFL tackles just about every single matchup in the SEC. Now, what do I like about this pick? I like that, A, he's 20 years old.
Yeah, he's
And there's
young.
A lot to work with.
He's young.
B, they needed somebody in the front seven. I said it to you. You basically have two guys that everyone knows in Bosa and Fred Warner. When this team was humming, when they had Eric Armstead, when they had DeForest Buckner and Dee Ford, then you put in Nick Bosa into that combination, and you were able to run that NASCAR package that they love so much. I actually think this, and everyone going Alden Smith or whatever, to me, I actually think he reminds me a little more of a twitchier Eric Armstead. And the reason why I'm going at this, if you look at some of his tape, he's played a lot inside. Eric Armstead played a lot inside. Eric Armstead set the edge in the run game in the wide nine. That's what got him the big money. It wasn't rushing the passer. Well, what this team has really missed is a guy set the edge. How many times have we watched one of these defensive ends just get folded by a tight end, just get completely go upfield and not stay gap integrity, responsibility centric, and just totally blow the assignment over and over and over again. So I don't know if this guy can rush the passer. I know he looks good on stunts. I know Baldy loves him. We're going to have him on at 7:30.
Certainly are.
They're not done. So to me, this is one of the bricks of trying to build the foundation of another good defense. I just personally believe that if the 49ers are going to go anywhere under Kyle Shanahan and the way he wants to play football, running the ball, getting stops, limiting possessions, that's the throwback way this team plays.
And shout out to those watching on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube. We are streaming on those platforms all day long. Brought to you by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal Financing at the dealer. And as always, we are coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios. Laughing Monk, righteously brewed in San Francisco. And you just heard Joe Shasky say it. Brian Baldinger, 7:30 Baldy's breakdowns. We'll break it all down. Mykal Williams, what he brings to the table. Who the 49ers could target later in this draft. They do have pick 43 today for round two. And then round three as well, pick 75 and the pick 100 for their one of their three. Or now, check that, four compensatory picks. Because as you know, in the Kyle Shanahan regime, they get a lot of compensatory picks.
You know, so there's a variety of ways to look at this. Like, do you even trust them?
to develop someone who's high, like a high upside guy. That's this is a guy that has a lot of traits.
Edge rushers, I actually don't trust them because they haven't shown me outside of Nick Bosa, who was a can't-miss prospect, that they could. Drake Jackson?
He was a third-round pick.
That was like the last guy that you drafted that was like that high as an edge rusher.
Well, let's look at their body of work. How many quote-unquote, and I don't think this guy's a project per se, but he's clearly a guy that they think, with Chris Kocurek alongside Nick Bosa, we think we can have this guy reach whatever his potential is currently. We think it can go even bigger. Is there any guy that you saw that this regime has drafted? It's like, oh, yeah, that's an upside pick. Because immediately everyone's going to say Trey Lance, and that was a, abject failure.
Yeah, Trey Lance. But okay.
Also, quarterback is probably the biggest bust position, maybe of all the
and
positions.
I could look at the quarterback, and all teams do this, right? You fall in love with a certain tool that a quarterback has. And these days, it's the arm, the strength, the athleticism, which I guess Shedeur Sanders does not have because he is falling, man. Man. He might fall to. Can he fall to the nine? I'm just saying. There might be a conversation with one Shedeur Sanders.
No.
He was the talk of the entire draft yesterday. Kept falling, and after Pittsburgh did not select a quarterback, and then the Giants traded back into the first round to take Jackson Dart out of Ole Miss, the quarterback there. Yeah, it's going to be very fascinating to see where he lands today, because I would assume he is taken in the second round. And we'll ask Brian Baldinger about that again, 7:30. But that was a story. Obviously, the Jaguars trading up to the second overall pick, Joe. That was a big story. I don't know what the hell they're doing. Yeah, I didn't get that one. I'm going to be honest. I did not understand. Like, Travis Hunter, good player, fun. Am I trading next year's first-round pick to move up three spots to go get him, though?
I mean, who was thinking that, the Jaguars, they're a DB away.
Right? Well, DB, like, wide receiver away. Like, I don't know what they're doing there. So
there are 1,000 wide receivers.
I know. So Cleveland received the number 5 pick in that pick swap, the second-round pick, a fourth-round selection, and a 2026 first-round pick. And then the Jags obviously get the number 2 pick and a couple of swaps.
So
that one was shocking to me as we're talking about draft day storylines outside of what the Niners did.
Joe, 2023, they went to the Super Bowl. 2019, they went to the Super Bowl, correct? When you look at scoring percentage, I'm talking about the times the other team has the ball. The other team's on offense. How many times does that team score percentage-wise? When they went to the Super Bowl in 2019, 28%. The year before
last. You're
saying
the opposition scores against them?
Yes.
Okay.
28%. So that means you're getting stops, 72% of
okay.
the time. Okay.
Right? Got math. Yes.
All right. So 28%. That's the low number. They were top three in the league that year. 2023, they actually gave up more points, but it was later in games because they were winning a lot.
Yeah.
But even then, it was 33%. All right. Last year, they gave up points on 44% of possessions for the other team. 44%.
Not good.
One of the worst teams in the league at that. So I got a million numbers. The one that sticks out for me, and if this guy doesn't get to the quarterback in terms of sacks, at minimum, he is going to improve their rush game. It sounds like he's the most polished rush defender on the edge in the draft, which I like. They need that. I know it's not sexy, but they need that. Stopping the run. They gave up 25 rushing touchdowns last year. When they are in their heyday and they're in their prime and they're going to the NFC Championship game, that number is somewhere between 9 and 13, okay? Half what that number was last year. I've got things like first downs and, yards per carry. All those numbers last year were awful, just abjectly awful. Whether it's we're talking about comparing and contrasting from Super Bowl years when the Niners were an elite team to comparing and contrasting to the rest of the league and where the league is at. Because we know the league will oscillate year to year on, throwing and running and things like that. Every metric tells you this defense sucks and they only have a couple guys. So to me, as much as I wanted to protect Brock Purdy, as much as it's nice to get the shiny weapons and things like that, they had to invest in the front seven. Now, is this player going to be any good? Do I trust Chris Kocurek? I have as many questions as everyone else out there. I'm not going to pretend like this is some slam dunk. We'll see. And I don't know if they have earned the benefit of the doubt on taking traits guys with high upside. For every Brandon Ayuk, who I was like, what? Where did that come from?
Right.
Who actually I think hit, there's also a Dante Pettis.
Yeah.
For every... let's say Nick Bosa or Deebo Samuel, I can point to a Javon Kinlaw.
Yeah.
I can point to a Reuben Foster, right? And so I think it's a big mixed bag here. So I don't know. Do people even think this is the right position to take?
888-957-9570.
I guess is where I'm going.
Yeah, no. Was that the position of need for the 49ers in the first round for you, Niner Nation? 888-957-9570. And you can hit us up, call or text the Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line. And again, Brian Baldinger, 7:30, the best football show podcast, Odyssey NFL Insider, former NFL offensive lineman, NFL Network. He does it all. Baldy breakdowns. This guy lives and breathes prospects. And he will tell you all about Mykel Williams. And in fact, he actually recorded this for us, for Odyssey, in regards to the draft spotlight. He did these for a bunch of the prospects in the first round. And this is what Baldy, his little snippet, and we'll get more in-depth about it at 7:30, but this is a little snippet of what Baldy has to say about one Mykel Williams.
Draft Spotlight with NFL Network's Brian Baldinger. Brought to you by Laughing Monk Brewing. Here's Baldy.
Let's look at Mykel Williams from Georgia. Now, he's been a three-year player for them. He was injured in the first game against Clemson this year and played on basically an injured ankle all year. But he is bigger than Nick Bosa, faster than Nick Bosa coming out of Ohio State. I mean, he's 6'5 and an 8. He's 267 pounds. Ran a 4.7 5.40 with long arms. All right, bench press 28 times. But you go back and you watch him as an 18-year-old freshman. Like, he's playing a three technique, taking on double teams. He's bringing heat off the edge. Like, he's standing deep offensive tackles up at the line of scrimmage, stack and shed. I think Mykel Williams is a real prospect at number 11 for the 49ers.
Draft Spotlight with Brian Baldinger. Brought to you by Laughing Monk Brewing. Righteously brewed in San Francisco.
It certainly is, and that's where we're broadcasting from. Shout out Sam Gadiri and Laughing Monk. Love you guys. Yeah, he just added me on LinkedIn. That's when you know you're tight with someone, when you're on LinkedIn and you connect. What's coming up in the game is brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. We'll continue to react to this. First round storylines, all of that. Plus, Jimmy Butler's butt. That's what we're going to talk about next as well on 95.7 The Game.
There wasn't a knockout grand slam pick that was going to please the masses. It didn't feel like there was this one gaping hole that they could have shored up with the one pick, because they've got a tall task ahead of themselves. Like, this team has a lot of holes.
Like, I don't know if there was actually, like, because this is one of those drafts where, unless you're like, you're doing your homework and watching every single Saturday in college sports, there wasn't like that many sexy names. Of course, you know Cam Ward, who went number one overall to the Tennessee Titans, yeah. Quarterback out of University of Miami. Ashton Gentry, leading rusher last year, goes to the Raiders at 6. People know those names, right? Mm-hmm. Even Tyler Warren, like, he fell a little bit. He was he wasn't even the first tight end taken. It was Loveland out of Michigan, but mm-hmm. Tyler Warren out of Penn State. It was kind of a name people knew, but there's not that big, sexy Jalen Carter of the world, right? A Warren Sapp, right? Guys like that you know. It's like
Javion Clown.
Right. There you, Khalil Mack even. Like, yeah. Like there wasn't that prospect in this draft. But it's a very deep draft is what I've read from all the people that think they know things mm-hmm. about all mm-hmm. these prospects. It's a deep defensive end draft. So Mykel Williams being there, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan spoke yesterday. We're going to get to some of that sound.
Yeah.
They were trying to trade up because they thought he was going to get drafted. Wow. That seems a little rich to me. But he fell to them. And even Mykel, I think, was a little surprised that he was the first Georgia player taken, in that first round. So Mykel Williams, we'll get to know him at 7 o'clock with Connor Hines, and more at 7:30 as well.
Going back to like the original comments we were making about 20 minutes ago, there is like an exercise here. I don't love taking the fourth or fifth best player. If you like, don't reach on a position of need.
You're a best player available guy, usually?
Well, there's a Venn diagram. Okay, what is my biggest need, right, versus, you know, is this the best player available? Mm. Versus also, like, is this a guy who's ready to play now? Yeah. How much work goes into this? And I think this is a guy that, though he's got questions in a variety of areas, which all these prospects do, I think he hits a lot of marks. A, it sounds like he's a great leader. I mean, when Kirby Smart is talking about your leadership, and Nick Saban is on television telling me that this guy's one of the guys I was going after because he's such a leader, and he was a grown man at 18 years old.
Character guy.
Like, that matters.
Yeah.
I think we've kind of figured that out with the Niners locker room. The fit matters.
Yeah.
I mean, we're learning that in sports in general.
Well, especially after what took place last year when we had the Devondre Campbell situation. And the leadership displayed by guys like George Kittle in that whole moment was it was on blast. And yeah, exactly. You need guys like that, especially young guys, to build a foundation for the future, too.
Exactly. And as I watched Man of the Year, Eric Armstead announced the pick for the Jacksonville Jaguars, losing him was a big loss in the locker room.
Mm.
People can argue about, was he worth the money? And they lost some leadership there. And clearly they lost the player.
Well, exactly. I was going to say the player specifically against the run.
Yes.
I know a lot of people like to harp on Eric Armstead when it came to the pass rush. But as a run defender, it was night and day losing him last year when it came to that run defense. It was awful.
No doubt.
Couldn't stop a nosebleed.
You know, so I'm looking at this draft and I'm saying to myself, all right, well, Abdul Carter was the number one edge player in this draft. And he went 3 overall. Then you went O-tackle. D-tackle, Mason Graham, who was linked to the Niners. Mm. Running back, second O-tackle, wide receiver, third O-tackle, tight end. Now, do you reach for the fourth offensive tackle there?
Mm.
At 11, I don't think that's a great value.
Maybe if Kelvin Banks had fallen, who obviously went 9 overall to the New Orleans Saints,
maybe.
The Texas OT, but maybe if he fell. But outside of that, yeah, there wasn't really a consensus, you know, offensive lineman take. There was a guard, obviously, after the Niners, mm-hmm. Tyler Booker out of Alabama, that went to the Cowboys. Like, I don't think you're drafting a guard in that situation. We already know what Kyle Shanahan and his feelings when it comes to drafting tackles. Unless he feels like they're future Hall of Famers, they don't draft offensive linemen.
Well,
outside of McGlinchey that one time, right?
Yes.
That's basically it.
So, you know, the next offensive tackle didn't go until pick 29. Now, 29 and 32 ended up both being offensive tackles. And knowing the Chiefs, the kid Simmons, who I actually was really intrigued on.
Some people say he might end up being the best, like, offensive lineman in this draft, but there's injury concerns there.
Exactly. Yeah. So there are certain red flags. Like, this guy is the second best edge rusher, at least on the Niners draft board. So I like the value on the pick. And then I'm looking at it and I'm saying to myself, it's people don't want to quantify run game because it's not sexy. So they look at sacks. Well, let's just look at the sacks. Opposite Nick Bosa, since he's been here since 2019, what's the most sacks anyone has gotten as a clear D end opposite him?
Since 2019, as a clear D end, that's actually a great question.
Wow. Because Armstead,
but he was a defensive tackle.
Exactly.
So that doesn't count.
And the year that he had 10, 2019.
Does he have the second most, though, outside of Bosa?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's a problem.
Okay.
That's a problem.
Let me just read you off. The top two guys not named Bosa on the edge, 8.5 last year for Leonard Floyd.
Okay.
8.5 for Kerry Hyder a couple of years ago.
Who's good.
The year Bosa went down. After that, 6.5 D Ford. We're not talking about a very high bar to clear to just be the second most productive edge guy opposite Nick Bosa.
That's actually insane.
Isn't that kind of crazy?
In a lost year that Leonard Floyd had the second most since acquiring Nick Bosa, Leonard Floyd had the second best defensive end season for this team. Leonard Floyd, who was
Guy's got to be good, right?
When I saw, like, watching Leonard Floyd last year, I couldn't see him half
quietest
the time.
8.5 sacks ever.
Right? Like, oh, my God.
Kerry Hyder's 8.5 was so much louder
than
his.
So I want to see Mykael Williams. Like, I need to feel his presence next year.
Yeah, one of their best defenses, people aren't going to, you know, want to hear this, but the reality is one of their best defenses, Sam Ebukam was a really good player for this team with Charles Amenihue.
Yeah.
And I think this guy kind of reminds me more of the Ebukam kind of like model. I think he's obviously going to have more upside, at least as people think. You can win a lot of games with that kind of production. Just be an absolute menace.
Can we just get someone that commands attention outside of Nick Bosa? I need someone else to free up Nick Bosa. So he's going to get chipped. He's going to get double teamed. He's definitely the player you look for if you're the opposing offense and that offensive line. I just need someone respectable outside of him. And whether that's stopping the run, and yeah, let's see if Mykael Williams could be that pass rush guy, because I'll be honest, that when I do start hearing and seeing things like, yeah, well, he needs to work on his pass rushing skills, I didn't love that. Didn't really make me all that like happy about it. Now, Chris Kocurek, he's had a long run of, you know, the Arden Keys of the world, helping them.
Arden Key had 6.5 sacks.
He did, yeah.
1 year.
Exactly.
And he's like a nobody.
Exactly. He did have talent, but again, he was a nobody that fell in the draft to, I think, the third or fourth round when the Raiders selected him. But even when he was with the Raiders, he was constantly whiffing. And when he finally became a 49er, he ended up getting those sacks. By the way, Warriors postseason coverage, Joe, is brought to you by Agape Golf Tournament on Monday, April 28th at Stone Tree Golf Club, presented by Atco Pest Control. Steiny and Guru are going to be broadcasting live from 10 to 2. And if you want to play, go to 957thegame.com and click on the events tab to sign up. All proceeds will benefit the North Bay and Golden Gate Regional Centers, as well as the San Francisco Autism Society of the Bay Area. I will be there. Joe Shasky will be there. We're going to be playing some golf on Monday. Cannot wait for that. Speaking of the Warriors, real quick, got a couple minutes here. And we're going to continue talking about the draft again at the top of the hour at 7 o'clock with Connor Hines, who works for CBS Atlanta, was at Michael Williams' house yesterday, knows the player, knows the person, and we're going to talk to him about it at 7. But in the meantime, big news that broke yesterday was Jimmy Butler and his injury status. This was Shams Charania, ESPN, and this is what he had to say. Golden State's Jimmy Butler has been diagnosed with a deep glute muscle contusion, and his status for Game 3 against the Houston Rockets is in, quote, serious jeopardy, league sources tell ESPN. This is best case because MRI showed Butler avoided any fracture or structural damage. Game 3 tomorrow, right here on 95.7 The Game at 5:30.
It's a sigh of relief, is
yes.
it not?
Yes.
Considering there's obviously a variance on what the injury could have been. I think they might have dodged a bullet here. It feels like if he's going to miss a game, it'll be one. Now, again, things can clearly change. And this goes back to it's all hands on deck. So if they need Gui Santos, Moses Moody, Jonathan Kuminga, you know, whoever, Pat Spencer, to step up in a limited role or even a full game absence, now they kind of have an idea of, hey, just weather the storm until Jimmy gets back. And it sounds like, you know, I was looking at some of the Heat Twitter last night who were saying that Jimmy essentially had an identical injury. And so here it goes. Butler suffered a glute contusion during the 2023 playoffs and never missed a game. The average time loss for all other glute contusions, this is normally throughout the regular season, is one game.
I like that we're calling it a glute contusion. It's basically a bruise on your butt. That's just what it is, and it's a deep one. So it's a pain tolerance thing at this point. And if it's a pain tolerance and you can't further any injury, that means it's good news. So it is good news, and I actually would expect Jimmy Butler to play tomorrow. I'd be shocked if he didn't play tomorrow. It's probably going to be listed as questionable, maybe a game-time decision. I would put money down that Jimmy Butler is playing tomorrow for the Golden State Warriors in their first home playoff game in 2 years, Joe. I'm fired up about it. This is an insane weekend, by the way. We got the draft. We got that game tomorrow. Now, all of a sudden, not that it's a must win, you fall down 2-1 all of a sudden, and Jimmy Butler looks like that injury's, you know, hampering him a little bit on the court. Yeah, there's going to be some big question marks when we're talking on Monday, but we're going to continue to talk about the 49ers on the other side. We'll get back into Jimmy Butler and his status as well. Bonte Hill joining us 9 o'clock in studio, NBC Sports Bay Area, pre and post for the Warriors, and obviously breaking down the 49ers draft. It's Spadoni, it's Shasky. Come on back. It's being brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you. Here for good.
I don't know, but he was in the game. Like he 30s, started, at, like he started at 18.
Like in his 30s, though, probably, I would assume, right?
Oh, yeah, he was in his 30s.
That's
what
I'm saying. Like, it does, like, once you get over 40, it's very difficult to keep it going.
Dr. Dre.
Okay, but he's more of a producer.
Like, you're asking, okay. I'm telling, you know.
All right, well, I'm just saying. Like, it just, that is a genre
I agree with you.
That does not age gracefully.
It's like boxing. It's for the young guys.
There you go. Brought to you by Golden State, serving the Bay Area for three generations. When you succeed, we succeed. Visit GoldenStateLumber.com.
Only other guy I can think of is 2 Chainz, who became popular in his 40s.
Okay, that's not bad. That's not bad. I hope this player ages gracefully, that being Michael Williams. And we're going to talk to Connor Hines at the top of the hour in about 10 minutes, CBS Atlanta.
Yeah,
he was at Michael Williams' house last night, so he's going to tell us about the person Michael Williams, because the 49ers drafted him 11th overall, edge rusher out of Georgia. We'll talk to Baldy at 7:30 as well, but Connor Hines is going to talk about more of the person that is Michael Williams. Is he a leader? Is he not a leader? I would assume he's a leader if you're drafting him that high. Character guy, high character. You know, you always hear that, right? Is he a gym rat? Is he the type of guy you want your daughter to date? Like, who is Michael Williams? I'm excited to hear about it and talk with Connor
in
about
10 minutes. You know what they say, when you're building a team, especially football, you want a lot of players with high character, and then you want a lot of high characters who can play.
Well, that's what I'm saying
and
right now.
Finding that mix is hard.
Because Dre Greenlaw was that guy that played on an edge.
100%.
And not to say anything like off the field is bad about Dre Greenlaw.
No, very nice guy.
On the field, I want some nastiness.
Lunatic.
Exactly. So you could be as nice as you want in person, but on the field, I want you to be like Troy Polamalu and diving at people. That's what I want.
Joe, you know, it's the league is so different now, right? Like than what it was 15 years ago. But yeah. Every time that the Niners,
particular.
Every time the Niners have been good since the Harbaugh era, it's coincided with a pretty stout front seven. Now, whether you want to go to the year that they didn't allow a rushing touchdown until, like, whatever, week 17, or if you want to talk about this team that went to the Super Bowl in 2023, they've always had a wave of really elite players in that front seven.
What won the Eagles the Super Bowl a couple months ago? There you go.
Well, now, their back end was really good, too.
But also, they didn't blitz once.
They were ferocious.
They just destroyed the Chiefs' offensive line. Mahomes had no shot in that game.
And I look at two different players. There's the kid, Zach Bond, who was a free agent who no one had ever heard of. And the kid from Georgia who played on the edge. Come on, the name's evading me now.
Jalen Carter.
No, the other kid.
What?
Nolan Smith.
Oh, Nolan Smith. Got it.
When they brought, and Jalen Carter was good prior to Fangio coming in, right? We knew he was kind of like going to be really good. But when you have Fangio, you know that he's going to get the most out of certain players. I think now with Robert Saleh here, Chris Kocurek, the Niners feel a little more comfortable maximizing a player who has higher upside as opposed to maybe, you know, we do these things, lower ceiling. There's no such thing as a low ceiling.
No.
Like, I thought Mac Jones had a low ceiling. And actually, it could get worse. You know what I mean? Like, we find that out. Any player can bust. Any player can be good. That's kind of the craziness of the draft. No one had George Kittle being a Hall of Famer. No one had Brock Purdy being a three-year starter. You know? And everything in between from, you know, Javon Kinlaw being on his fourth team or third team or whatever, to Nick Bosa being a Hall of Famer. You just never know. But when you have Robert Saleh, when you have Chris Kocurek, I think there is an infrastructure in place where you feel a little more confident to be able to take a traitsy guy, which is what this guy is, with high character and say, all right, he's really good at stopping the run. Can we develop some of the hand moves? Can we add layers to his pass rushing skill set? Can his ankle, you know, remain healthy and not be banged up where it's compromising his explosion? Clearly, the guy is a physical freak. Clearly, he's got power. Can they teach him some of the nuances? I don't know. We'll find out.
Well, your boy Mel Kiper Jr. talked about it yesterday. A lot of people like the draft prognosticators, right? You had Lewis Riddick, whether you're watching the ESPN feed or watching NFL Network, right? You got Joel Klatt defending the hell out of Shedeur Sanders and not knowing why he kept falling and falling. That was kind of the theme last night. We'll get to Shedeur because that is a big takeaway from the first round yesterday. And you know what? It might be a storyline if he's still falling and the 49ers are picking, you know, what's the exact number? Hold on, I got it right here. Pick 43. So if he's still falling 11 picks into the second round, do you consider that? 888-957-9570. But Mel Kiper, Booker McFarland, Lewis Riddick, they love the pick.
Yeah, he had a high grade going into the season, Greeny. Then he had that ankle injury, a left ankle injury against Clemson, came back from it and played and didn't shut it down. Continued to play. That's him to be somewhat productive. I mean, he had 9 tackles for loss. He had 5 sacks. He forced a couple fumbles. He looks the part of an edge rusher in the National Football League with his size, his long arms, 34-and-a-half arms, and huge hands. What he needs to do is get a more repertoire of moves going, coming after the quarterback off the edge. I thought he played the run great. He has a strong run defense off the edge, but as a pass rusher, I thought a little bit more work, that pass rush specialist that these teams have who have to get the most out of Mike L. Williams.
And that's ultimately what needs to happen, because you need to get the quarterback down. I'm from the Al Davis school of thought. The quarterback must go down. He must go down hard. That's how you set the tone. That's how the Eagles set the tone in the Super Bowl. Mahomes had no shot in that game early on. Like, you watch in hindsight, they were battering and bruising him early. He had no confidence in his O-line, and thus he was making mistakes left and right. That's what the 49ers need to get back to, and how quickly can Mike L. Williams do that? Because we're talking about this draft class, Joe. You know, we looked at the Eagles. Now, were the 49ers where the Eagles were at this time last year? I don't think so. I think the Eagles had more talent top to bottom on that roster. But that being said, it was that draft class of Cooper DeJean, Quinyon Mitchell, and shoring up that secondary that was putrid just a season prior, and that being the missing link, and that carrying them to the Super Bowl with that defensive line.
But now, also Vic Fangio.
No, yes, that helps a lot.
Yes.
Now you're bringing back Robert Saleh if you're the 49ers, who you have been to a Super Bowl with. You've made sweet love together at one point. Can Mike L. Williams get off the ground running. I'm not asking him to be a double-digit sack guy in his first year. That's a lot of expectations on the young man. Can you take some of the pressure off of Nick Bosa? That's what I need from him.
But, Joe, if this were last year's defensive coordinator, I would say, what are we doing?
Wow.
No, I think that this
factors. Yes.
I think this factors in. Like, when the Chiefs take someone on offense, like they did yesterday, that offensive tackle, you know what I say to myself? Andy Reid will probably get it right. Whether he does or doesn't, like, he's earned the benefit of the doubt, right? And there are certain players on their defensive side where I'm like, yeah, I really trust. Come on, what's the guy's name?
Oh, Spagnuolo.
Yeah. I trust Spagnuolo to get it right, right?
Spags.
Monty Kiffin was a guy that I gave the benefit of the doubt to. Oh, Monty Kiffin's got him. Dick LeBeau's got him. He'll figure it out.
Right.
Robert Saleh does kind of get some benefit of the doubt. Maybe not to the degree of those names that I mentioned, but I think that that factors into why you would feel a little more confident in this player becoming that type of a guy. Because, you know, when Robert Saleh was here, a lot of guys took a step forward. DeForest Buckner took a step forward. Eric Armstead took a step forward where he figured out what his position was and how to maximize him. Whereas prior, it's like, is he a D end in a 3-4? Is he a D tackle? Like, what is he? Obviously, Bosa's been good with or without Robert Saleh, but I think a lot of guys have shown a lot of promise with him, and so I think that they're banking a lot of this into the Saleh stuff.
Brought to you by Golden State, serving the Bay Area for three generations. When you succeed, we succeed. Visit GoldenStateLumber.com. So that was Kiper. This one was more interesting from my perspective, though. Booger McFarland on the draft broadcast yesterday for ESPN, talking about Micah Williams having things you just can't teach.
He's got the things that you cannot teach, the traits, the height, the arm length, the ability to set the edge and play the run. We know he's technically sound playing at Georgia the way Kirby Smart coaches defense. The only concern I have is when it comes to using those traits and getting to the passer, I didn't see much of a rush plan, Lou. I didn't see any moves besides the speed to power. He's going to have to continue to develop the moves because when you get to the National Football League level, just the traits won't win. You have to have more than traits. You need to be able to have a pass rush arsenal. How are you going to beat the offensive tackle and get to the quarterback? John Lynch loves him. He loves defensive line. You're going to pair him with Nick Bosa, create two bookends. But is he going to be able to live up to this feeling as far as the pass rush arsenal? I want to see that.
So it comes down to technique, right? And Chris Kocurek, who we have been glowing and raving about, it feels like forever. When it comes to the defensive line, right? No, you give him an Arden Key or a Cleve Furl. You come here, you save your career, and you can get signed somewhere else for a couple more $1 million than you came in with, right? I think that shine's worn off a little bit in the last couple years. This needs to be a hit, as far as I'm concerned. Micah Williams is a whiff. Yeah, I don't see this team. Like, and again, the draft's not over. Maybe they shore up. Maybe they get a defensive tackle at some point. Well, I'm not sure. They have the pick 43 today. They have pick 75 in the third round. Pick 100 in the third round as well. And then a bunch more. So maybe you do some trade packages. But as far as I'm concerned, like, Micah Williams needs to be a hit for this team and this defense to get back going again. Like, they need production elsewhere.
Of course.
You said, you even asked the question early on. Outside of Nick Bosa on that D-line, who do you trust? No one. The answer is no one.
I know. And there are a lot of other players that are available in this draft that the Niners could select. Look, I don't view this team as one player away.
No, of course not. But this defensive line definitely needs to start shoring up.
But, but that's where I would go to you. Like, when they've been at their best, let's go back to the Harbaugh days. It was Alden, Justin Smith, okay,